to the Garden Show.
I'm Molly Cadler.
And I'm Kitty Labounty.
Oh, wait, I wasn't on, and now I am.
Hi, Molly.
Good morning. Hey, you can still talk about gardening and think about gardening, even though it's December.
December and covered with ice and snow and a few other things.
We wanted to talk about...
Let's just talk.
Yeah.
She's trying to help me out here. So we wanted to talk about winter plants.
Right. So this is the time of year when, of course, we have wreaths and garlands, and that happens extensively in Sitka. And probably you already have them up. If you don't and you have them somewhere where they're in the warm because you're protecting them, that's just the opposite of what they need. So they want to be cool and they want to be moist.
Indeedy. So yes, when mine was delivered to me, and I was very grateful that it was delivered to me, but it hung on my door for a couple of days inside. And so I actually soaked it. I took the little ribbon off and soaked it for a little while so it would make sure it just lasted as long as I wanted it to. I mean, evergreens are great. That's the wonder of evergreens, is that they stay green for a long time, and they do excellent choices in terms of which evergreens they include in the wreaths. So they also don't drop like all their needles and things like that. But still, for them to look their best, they need to have a little moisture.
The other thing that's going to need moisture, of course, is your Christmas tree. And if you're someone who cuts a tree or buys a cut tree, the key to that doing well is water.
Indeedy.
And there's lots of formulas about what you should put in the water to keep your tree going. And some of those might be mildly helpful, but the main thing is just making sure you keep it watered. If you have the ability to cut the trunk of the tree on a Christmas tree that you've purchased that was harvested probably a couple of months ago, quite honestly, your tree will probably do better. It will have a fresh cut to pull that water up into the branches and needles.
Now, in case you're envisioning, picking up your decorated Christmas tree out of the Christmas tree stand and recutting it, that's not what Molly means at all. She means recutting it after you, so you buy it, before you get it all set up in the stand, recut it and have some fresh tubes, basically, for that water to get pulled up.
But if that's not happening and your tree is already up, the main thing to be sure is just to keep the water. And if you have one laying around and you're going to put it up, remember that first 24 hours, they can take up so much water in the warmth of your house. You'll be surprised.
Yeah, oftentimes when we cut the tree, we will actually put it in a bucket of water outside for at least the first night. We usually can't, handle it for too much longer, but for at least, several hours, we'll let it soak up water outside while we, kind of rearrange the house and try and figure out where on earth we're going to put this tree that's always bigger than we think it is, and then go ahead and put it in the house. And I started out a long time ago picking spruce trees, and people are always like, are you crazy? All the needles fall off and all that. And they haven't been too bad, actually. As long as they're watered well enough, it takes them a long time to really start dropping their needles. Now, maybe my house is a little cooler than other people's, but the Christmas tree's in the same room as a rather large wood stove, so I think it gets warm. But if you have little kids, this is why this started. So I had little kids and ornaments on the tree, and if you didn't want to constantly be saying no, don't touch that, there was like these sharp needles. So it's my evil Christmas trick.
It also works, I think, for cats. So the combination of the sharp needles for cats and kids. The other thing is, they have a really beautiful shape, and mm-hmm. we have a lot of them here, so not a bad choice. One of the things to do with your Christmas tree after the season is to cut it up and lay it on your garden beds. And the reason is that we, this year in particular, have some very nicely frozen ground. And that's a good thing in terms of keeping plants dormant. A lot of our plants struggle when they go in and out of dormancy. And so once you have a good freeze on, you can actually insulate your garden beds and prevent both frost heaves and, freezing and thawing that can happen across our southeast winters.
Yeah, I was very grateful for the snow that came before the hard cold. I had, you know, I have garlic that I planted deep enough and I covered with a good mulch of kelp and all that. But I still think that the snow on top of that is going to help them do better. Plus, I don't harvest all of my carrots usually. I don't dig all of them. So I had a tarp on top and then I've got snow on that. And so I'm crossing my fingers. Last year was so different. I got a little complacent this year, actually, because it was like, you know, it's not really cold here. We're like living in Seattle now. Wrong.
Right.
So, yeah. So we'll see. I'll have to give a report on how the carrots fared under a tarp and a pile of snow.
The other thing that will be interesting to see is the kale. We have grown kale. I think many of us have grown kale through the winter for the last few years. And it may still be just fine. We'll see how it looks when we get through this cold snap. The weather forecast looks like we're going to have warmer weather coming up. And your kale, if it isn't, you know, like frozen off, it is completely edible and it might be tastier than ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have some younger plants in the greenhouse that still look good. And my greenhouse isn't heated, so that's not like a guaranteed spot. So I'm like crossing my fingers that it was warm enough in there that it didn't, that I didn't manage to kill my fuchsias, which I might have. So I could be starting over with a few things next year because of my complacency. But winter plants, when I woke up last night, I kept thinking of poinsettias because I really love poinsettias, and you know they're overused or whatever, but they're bright and gorgeous this time of year, and they're easy.
Pretty common holiday tradition to have a poinsettia in your home over the holiday seasons. The poinsettia hails from Mexico and Central America. It's a perennial there. That's why they have those sort of woody-ish stems. And if you've tried to grow one on and are frustrated it never blooms again, but instead looks like a little shrub, well, you've done the right thing because that's what it is. It isn't easy to put them through their cycle to get them to come back and bloom. It certainly is possible. I'm not going to detail the...
you just have to be dedicated.
The steps to it. You can Google that and try it out. I think that our climate is difficult for poinsettias, and particular this time of year, it's interesting that we force them and have them as a holiday season plant, because as a semi-tropical flowering, and actually the colorful part are bracts, not the flower, they are really susceptible to cold air. So if you buy one, be sure and wrap it up well, even just to walk it if it's a chilly day, from the store to your car, because a good shock of frigid air could really make it drop all those beautiful leaves and bracts.
Yeah, no, it's unfortunate. But they are, I'm impressed, they are tough once you get them home. So I used to go through a number of elaborate tricks with, you know, plastic bags to try and keep that warm air around the poinsettias. You know, because mine had to go for a skiff ride and a hike and all that sort of stuff first. And they always did fine. You know, I didn't try to take any home when it was like 5 degrees out or anything like that. But still, they did just fine. And I found that mine actually lasted better in my house probably than in some other warmer locations. They usually stayed very colorful almost through February, and if not longer. I think the biggest trick with them, so you've got to protect them from the cold. The other trick with them is not to overwater them. They do not want to be soggy. They're you know, come from well-drained sort of ground, and that's what they're looking for. In fact, if you know, other than your Christmas tree, all your other like holiday sort of plants, your amaryllis and all that, paper whites, the big key is not to drown them. You know, they need moisture, but they need to be dry. So, like, they often come in those little foil wrappers. I like the foil wrapper. It usually looks better than the pot, but I take it off to water it. I'll go put it in the sink, water it, let it drain, put it back in its little foil wrapper, and then set it out again. And that seems to work pretty well.
Yeah, our houses tend to be dry. If it's cold outside, where we are heating, using more heating to keep it to ambient people temperature. But that dryness is unusual for our plants that are growing in our homes, our house plants. Of course, our poinsettias aren't used to our homes. And the key really is to sort of pay attention and water them enough, but never let them set in water, as Kitty mentioned.
So no, December 12th is actual National Poinsettia Day. I just thought I'd throw that out there because that is the... It's probably not the birthday. It's probably like the death day of the person who popularized them, who was an ambassador to Mexico, who brought them back to the States, and actually also founded the Smithsonian, by the way. But at any rate, he was a botanist, Mr. Poinsett. And so that day honors the plant and him. So we're just past that. So we can still have it today.
All right. The other thing to know about poinsettias is there's a lot of talk about they're poisonous and they're dangerous for pets and they're dangerous for you and they're dangerous for children. And for the most part, that's not at all true. They are from the Euphorbia family. And so you might have noticed that they exude that little milky white sap. That can be irritating, and I think that's the root of their poisonous and dangerous. Some people have maybe more of an allergy. It's thought that if you have an allergy to latex, you might actually be more susceptible to that white stuff. But the really thing is, if you just wash your hands, you're going to be just fine. And I don't think it's at all a danger to your children or your pets to have a poinsettia in your home.
No, the last I read a cooperative extension report from Minnesota, and they said that your child would have to eat about 500 poinsettia leaves before they had ill effects, and the taste is so bad. There is no way someone's going to eat 500 leaves of poinsettia, let alone find 500 leaves in your house, probably. So it shouldn't be a problem. Enjoy your poinsettia. They come in all different colors now. Well, not all different colors, but red, white. I've seen pinks. We had these cool variegated ones for a while in town that were gorgeous. So enjoy them.
So something else to enjoy if you like to see something come from a bulb and go into bloom are the paper whites. And they look just like the daffodil bulbs you plant in the fall to bloom in the spring, because that's exactly what they are. They happen to be a daffodil, in essence, a narcissus that doesn't need the cold chilling period. That's why we plant them in the fall, because they need not. You know what I mean. Not the paper whites, but our daffodils. We plant them in the soil in the fall because they need a chilling period to perform that beautiful bloom in the spring. And the difference between paper whites and daffodils is the paper white species doesn't need any chilling. You can buy those bulbs. In fact, they need almost nothing but water. And so the common culture is just to take them, use a bunch of rocks to hold them, and water just to the base of the bulb, and away you go. They will sprout and bloom in your home quite easily. Now, the frustrating thing about them, from my perspective, is that they fall over easily, and you're going to have a much nicer time if you can plant them and grow them in a taller container. You can't fill the water up to the top. You still want the water just to the base of the bulbs or up a little bit from there. You don't want to cover the bulbs in water. But if you have a cylindrical shape to hold about a half the length of the stems, so 6 or 8 mm-hmm. inches, I think you're going to be way more satisfied with growing paper whites.
Yeah, because they do get super floppy. I mean, the other way to get it is some sort of one of those ring sort of stands for, I was like, oh yeah, you know, like you use in chemistry. No, like you use in the garden to just start. Because otherwise they flop over very, very easily. And it could be, you know, maybe if they had enough bright light, they might not. But in the end, they're not rooted very deeply in that rocky material. So there's not a lot to keep them there. If you don't want to tie them up or use a ring, see if you can find a taller container. That can also be a problem with amaryllis, I've noticed.
Right. So let's talk about those in a moment. But I just wanted to say one more thing about paper whites. They're highly scented, and that is part of their attraction. But if you plant many, many of them, it can be overwhelming. So if you have a lot of them and you want to plant them and share them with your friends, that might be a good way to go, because you don't need a lot of them for that scent. It can be a little overwhelming.
No, I think one pot of paper whites will do your whole house, even if you have a really big house. And you can always move them around. Let's say they get kind of overpowering in the dining room. Well, go put them in the bathroom or something for a while and just move them, because they really are. It's a glorious scent, but it can be a little on the overpowering side.
So there's no scent problem with amaryllis, and they are another plant that we grow indoors from bulbs, and I find them very glorious. And our climate is pretty amenable to growing amaryllis and getting them to rebloom.
Mm-hmm.
So much easier than any of the other things we've talked about in terms of trying to get them to rebloom. So this time of year, they generally come either in a kit with a pot and some soil and all of that, which is fantastic, or just the big old amaryllis bulb. And with amaryllis, bulb size, the bigger the better in terms of what you're going to get. A super big bulb may have up to 3 stalks worth of blooms in it when you purchase it. So that's a great thing. And so all you're going to do is plant it in a fairly small pot. They perform best if they are not in a really large pot with a lot of material, soil material. So fairly small pot. And for some reason, they don't want that bulb to be completely buried. So you're going to plant it up to about halfway the length of the whole bulb. Of course, obviously, roots down mm-hmm. and the shoot up. And then the last thing you want to do if it's a brand new one is water it, but not overwater it. It needs a chance to slowly come out of its dormancy and develop some roots. So just moist, but not overwatered.
Yeah, they're, it's the same deal with the paper whites and the poinsettia. They need some moisture, but it's easier for us to overwater these things than in general to underwater. In fact, it's neglect in some cases is good for these guys. I like to plant them so that I know that their roots are going to be well secured. So I use a big enough pot. I mean, I don't give them a ton of root room. So maybe like a good inch around, like all the way around the outside of the bulb. So I make the pot that much bigger in diameter. And I do put more actual soil in this mix. So it's soil and maybe some, you know, perlite or vermiculite or something like that. So there's actual some real stuff, because the amaryllis will rebloom for you as opposed to the paper whites or whatever. You could probably work out how to get those to rebloom, but I have never bothered. The amaryllis
I think the paper whites go to the compost once they're done.
That's pretty much what I do too. I would hesitate to say you can't ever get them to go. It's just like, I just don't bother. But the amaryllis you do. So you want to treat that plant like it's a plant you want to keep going. So give it some real soil. I like to actually periodically fertilize it later on in the season to, you know, keep it going. And not very much. I give it just some weak fertilizer because I want it to keep growing. I put mine outside in the summer and let them do whatever they want to do. And then usually I remember to bring them in and start them going again. And that treatment has worked really well.
So I never put mine outside. I keep them inside. And part of the reason is I don't want to deal with bringing pests into my house, which you just can be careful and check for and give them a good wash to bring them in. So it's not a bad idea. It's just a choice. So if you want to get them to rebloom, what you need to do is help them into dormancy. So late in the summer, as the sun is, the day length is really reducing, the ideal thing is to slow down the watering and slowly let them kind of wither back the leaves and then cut the leaves all the way off. Sometimes the directions say you've got to take them out of the pot and do this and that. You don't have to take them out of the pot. You certainly can if you think it's time for fresh dirt and a new pot, but you can just leave them in a pot. I tend to wait till the leaves are done, cut all those leaves off. You know, the last one or two stragglers you can just clip off, even if they're still green. And then set it in a cooler part of your house. Doesn't necessarily need to be dark or anything. And then check every few weeks, because you will see the bulb sending up the bud,
mm-hmm.
no leaves, but just that bud coming up. And then you know it's time to bring it back into the warm, start watering it again, and it will flower. And I have some I have some amaryllis that are on year 7, and they've mm-hmm. rebloomed every year. And really, you know, they've survived people going on vacation and different people taking care of them. So they are not terribly tough to get to rebloom. And boy, are they a showy and glorious thing.
Oh, yeah.
So it seems like such a gift when they come back and bloom again.
Oh, yeah. And they're another one that you can get different colors. I had one that I absolutely loved that was green and white. It was just a gorgeous one. And I don't see that one very often. More typically, they're the big, showy red or pink, which are glorious. I mean, this time of year, a bright show in your house is not a bad thing at all. So I encourage you to invest in an amaryllis and to take the time, what little time it actually requires to keep one going.
The other thing to think about this time of year is what's happening with the rest of the houseplants that you have. And this is a tough time. If they're looking kind of sad, well, that's understandable. They don't like this low light level that we have as we're rolling to solstice. Generally, they're used to having nice, humid air, which is what Southeast Alaska offers all of our plants, except for when it's very cold and we really crank up the heat in our homes. So now our homes are drafty, probably warm, but very dry in comparison. Mm-hmm. And those are tough, tough conditions. So no light and very dry. So you need to, you want to not encourage your plants to grow. This is not the time to feed them. If they look punky, don't give them any plant food. They're not going to appreciate it. And you want to be careful about watering. You want to check and make sure you're not underwatering because your environment in your home is so dry. Mm-hmm. But you don't want to overwater because they're not using much water. They're barely staying alive, not really actively growing.
Right. They're in their dormancy period, which is just what you want this time of year. So the plants I have left as houseplants are almost all plants that tolerate more dry sort of conditions. I have, you know, a lemon tree, and I have a bunch of cactuses and things like that. But I also have Christmas cactuses, and they require a little bit more water and attention because they're about to bloom too. And they're another plant that's worth investing in because they will rebloom every year without you having to do anything to them at all. So they're one of the few plants we have, house plants at least, that you want to encourage to keep growing this time of year, just with enough water. I still don't give those guys much fertilizer either. They won't get fertilizer until probably March, but you do want to make sure that they stay nice and moist. And they will give you a lovely show.
Well, Kitty, thanks so much for being here this morning. Season's greetings from us at The Garden Show. We hope you enjoy your winter flowers. You're listening to KCAW in Sitka.